history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are seemingly ordinary Americans around you with extraordinary stories to tell. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. We're going to hear quite a story today. Who in his right mind would purposely fly into a typhoon? We'll learn the answer in Shafter, California. Today, it's a city of about 18,000 northwest of Bakersfield in Kern County. 75 years ago, it was under 1,300 people, and seven of them belonged to the Weedman family. Mert Weedman has spent most of his 92 years in Shafter, gone for college and his Navy service in World War II. You were born here, Mert, grew up on a farm. What were you guys growing back then?
Alfalfa and cotton. Later on, we grew potatoes, but basically in those years, it was cotton and alfalfa.
So were you out there picking the cotton?
Not only in our place, but many other farms I picked cotton.
From the age of what? How old were you when you started?
Well, in the sixth grade, I was picking cotton, just a little bit, you know. But I was cutting grapes in the seventh grade. It was just typical of all the males in Shafter. They let out school early for the potato crops, and then in the fall, we were cutting grapes for raisins.
So hard work was no stranger to you.
Oh, I tell you, I was just one of many that doing exactly the same thing. And we didn't know any different.
Well, and you had company. You had three brothers and a sister that probably had to do the same kinds of things, huh?
Not my sister didn't, but she was older, quite a bit older than we were, but all four of us worked in the field.
And all four of you would go on to serve in World War II.
Oh, that's correct.
But before that, you had Shafter High School here. What was it like going to school in a farm town during the Great Depression?
Well, I tell you what, my mom made my coat and some of my clothes, except for our pants. We wore corduroy pants, and we'd buy them in the fall and wear them all winter long, the same pants, no washing them, anything, just wore them. One pair of corduroy pants would last the winter.
And I bet they smelled great by the spring.
Yeah, and then the following year you wore your brother's corduroy pants.
Hand me down. Did you feel the effects of the Depression? Were you aware that, you know, that this was any different than it was supposed to be?
We didn't know any different. Mm-hmm. You know, I was born in 24, and I know that my relatives, my dad had a tremendous garden. He just had blackberries and asparagus and all kinds of stuff that you grew. And then we had a little orchard of fruit trees, pear, apple, etc. And so we got lots of visitations from my mom's relatives from L.A. And we also had a cow, so we had lots of whipped cream. And I know one year my cousin, who was a senior in high school, said to my dad, "Uncle Oscar, which spigot does the cream come out of?"
Oh, that's great. I bet you guys had a good laugh at the time on that one. Do you remember having some dreams, some ambitions, some ideas of, hey, when I grow up, I'm going to do X, Y, Z?
I just hoping that I could go to college. That was my hope. I didn't have any plans for what line of work I'd go into. Except in high school, they decided I wanted to go into engineering. But really, I didn't have any. You know, in those days, you ask about any feeling about, everybody was broke. I mean, we didn't know any different. And at high school, nobody had any cars. And we either walked home or went home in a bus, and now up to the high school, it's overcrowded with new cars, you know. and everybody had a cellular phone now, and we had no telephone at home and no electricity at home. And we just didn't know, everybody was the same boat. You didn't have any feeling about being broke or anything, but, you know, we'd cut grapes when we started in the seventh grade in the fall, and you cut grapes for 3/4 of a cent a tray. You laid out a framework that was maybe 3 feet by whatever it was, 2 feet. And you'd take a lug box and you'd lay down the tray paper and you'd go in under the vines and cut the grapes. And there were black widow spiders and spiders of all kinds, wasps, bees, hornets, and you'd have to go under those vines, and it's so hot out there in the sand, and you dump, fill up your box, and you dump them under the tray, and you got 3/4 of a cent for every tray. And so when we were in grammar school, if we could make 75 cents a day, we felt real proud. Anything we wanted that we could afford, we could buy with our own money.
And you said no electricity. And I'm thinking a lot of people listening right now can't even imagine living a day without electricity, let alone their whole childhood. How did you guys handle, for instance, refrigeration?
Well, we slaughtered our own beef. We didn't have a refrigeration, so we took it up the ice house and then traded it for ice, and part of the beef went to the fellow that owned the ice house. And then would my dad bring home 100 pounds of ice and put it in our ice box. And then once a week he'd go into the ice house and he'd take a hacksaw and cut off a slab of beef. And my mom would bring it home, and it was all covered with mold. My mom would wash it off with vinegar, and we'd cook it, and she canned some of it. She did a lot of canning of all our stuff that we were raising. But the worst thing about it is those calves, your calf, you'd ride around and he'd come running over to us. We'd feed him carrots or something and they'd just become pets. We could jump on them. They wouldn't buck us off. And we'd ride them all around, and then came the day that they had to be sacrificed for our food. That was a tough deal.
I imagine so, yeah. Especially as a kid. You get attached and then you're eating your friends.
Oh, gosh, it was terrible. We had raised pigs and we had all kinds of ducks, geese, lots of peacocks, and chickens, of course.
How many people were in Shafter during that time?
I can't even answer that. But there weren't many.
So you didn't have a lot of competition getting voted student body president at Shafter High School?
No, no.
And you were a pretty good football player, too, for the Generals.
There's about 13 or 14 of us went. Played football for the high school. You go both ways, so you get pretty well worn out, but all of us were pretty good shape. We worked, you know, farm, yeah. Worked out, and so. But that's the way it was, 13 players.
And there was a rivalry then that is still a rivalry now in this part of Kern County.
Between Wasco and Shafter.
And you had quite a moment in that game one year.
Oh, yeah. We were always wanting to beat Wasco, and Wasco was ahead of us in the game, and they were about 4 points ahead of us, as I recall. And I broke through. They had the ball almost on our goal line, and I leaped up, and the ball went up in the air. I blocked a pass and went up there, and Ray Rexus, he's gone now, but he had Rexus Studio in Wasco in later years, good friend of mine. And anyway, he started running down the field, and not one person behind him, and he got down to about 30-yard line. Here we were going to beat Wasco for one of the first times, and he fell down and ran out of gas.
You deflect it. He intercepts it. He's running the other way. No one's going to catch him.
No.
And then he tripped himself and went down.
Yeah.
And you never let him live it down.
No, that's right.
Is that why he had to open his studio in Wasco and not Shafter?
Yeah.
But something happened, probably not long after that, actually. In December of 1941, your senior year, everybody seems to have a memory of this, December 7th, 1941. What was the first you heard of what had happened out in Hawaii?
On Sunday. I didn't know where Hawaii was. I'd heard about it, but I knew it was off the continent, but I had off California, but no idea, absolutely. Didn't know how many islands. I just didn't know anything at all about it. And that was on Sunday. And then on Monday, we all gathered in the auditorium, and they had the radio on and listening to President Roosevelt declare war.
So you, as student body president, and all your fellow Shafter High School students, you're huddled in this auditorium listening to a speech that people still listen to today and remember so vividly. And it was a day that really changed the world and certainly changed America's consciousness. What did that do to you to hear your president saying, this is what happened and this is what we're going to do about it?
Well, we were all excited to get into the war. You know, a lot of my friends were 17 years old at that time, most of us were, and a lot of them went right into the service, not graduating, told them they're 18 years old, and nobody really checked on it. So a lot of 17-year-olds went into the service claiming they were 18.
Did you have any feelings about that? Is that something that you thought you were
to finish school first. I was fortunate to be able to graduate from high school before I went in.
And what about your brothers?
My brother was electrical engineer for Bell Telephone Company. They took him in and gave him a lieutenant job and put him in charge of a depot where they're shipping out ammunition up in San Francisco. And then my second brother, oh, that's a story in itself. Some smart guy in the government in 1940 decided that there's going to be a problem in the world and we might be involved in it. So they sent a member of the Pan American Airlines all over the world establishing bases for Pan American. They couldn't establish them for the United States, but they established them for Pan American. And then the British were being pushed all over Africa. So the government said to these different schools, junior colleges mostly, you take flying as a course. At no charge to you, you became a pilot. And then in 1941, before the war started, my brother Clark, Pan American hired him to go to Florida to fly pursuit planes, fighters, from Florida to South America and then across to Africa, where the British military would take over. They could not use the military because the United States was a neutral country, so they couldn't use military pilots from the Army and Navy to fly those planes. Mm-hmm. So they paid these kids. My brother was paid $200 a month to fly these planes from... Oh, they just train them and fly them. No fighting. Uh-huh. And they'd fly, as I say, down to South America, across to Africa. And
how would he get back?
They'd come back in a C-46.
They flew fighters over and flew home on transports.
Yeah.
So your brother was involved in the war before America was involved in the war.
Oh, yes. And then they had the choice. When America entered the war, these fellows that were trained had the choice of becoming a pilot in the U.S. military or staying with Pan American and getting a reserve commission. So my brother got a reserve commission as a naval officer, and he elected to stay with Pan American. He became a first officer on a flying boat. In fact, he flew over Queen Wilhelmina on a Pan American flying boat from the United States to Britain, Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands.
Uh-huh.
And she
was his passenger.
That's right. It's interesting about how he got started. A farm boy from a poor family in Shafter, retired from Pan American after flying with him. He was a senior captain.
And as for you, you would go from Shafter High School to UCLA.
That's right. And then you had to sign up for either a military there at UCLA, either Navy or Army. And fortunately, I signed up for Navy. On December 6th, they told us we had to sign up and become an actual member of either Navy or Army by December 7th.
Or else you'd be drafted.
Yeah, you'd be drafted. That's
uh-huh.
right. And then we stayed. It was a V-12 program. And we always said it's a victory in 12 years or we fight. But they trained so many men in every field. It was quite a program that the government put on. So I got free education at UCLA for a while. And then one day, my friend and myself were called into the office, and the executive officer said, "You've been picked to go into aerology." And we said, "What is aerology?" And he said, "Something to do with airplanes." But actually, an aerologist in the Navy is a meteorologist. And so we were with 150 officers sent back to UCLA to study, I don't know, 15 or 20 of us, enlisted men with 150 officers. And then when we completed that, we went to Notre Dame Midshipman School, just a small group. At that time, Notre Dame was taken over by the armed forces for the military training, but they also continued with the civilians there. Then after 90 days, at the age of 20, I became a line officer for the Navy, and the Navy people always call us the 90-day wonders, you know. From there, I was sent to Seattle, and then from Seattle, I was sent up to Alaska, out to Dutch Harbor and to Kiskanat, too, and then Point Barrow. Then I got back and I had orders to report to the Weather Central in Honolulu. And the reason of that was because of a terrible tragedy that Admiral Halsey got his fleet into in the Pacific Ocean. He lost three destroyers, 793 men, and it was just an immeasurable damage to the fleet. One of the worst disasters for the Navy. These typhoons would form at the equator and move north, northwest, and nobody knew where they were. We had no satellites, no way to determine where these storms were, and they cover relatively a small area. It's a big area, but it's relatively small to other storms. And so Admiral Halsey turned the wrong way and went into this typhoon that just literally demolished his fleet. They sunk three destroyers, I was saying, but the damage to the aircraft carriers. And so they decided they better have somebody up in the sky looking for typhoons, and so that's what I went out in the Pacific for, and I became the first Navy weather officer to fly in a typhoon on purpose.
Now that sounds like something we're going to need to explore, doesn't it? We'll do that when we come right back. For photos and videos relating to Mert and his story, go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.